one of the main things that heat stress does is reduce dry matter intake. So those deficiencies come right away. As a physiologist, we know the impact that that can have, but work from Lance Baumgart have shown that it's not just about intake. There's some impacts of heat stress that directly affect the mammary gland and different other tissues that are leading to those reductions in milk that we see in the lactating cow.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Adiseo USA, producers of SmartAmine M and MilkPay.com.
Okay, welcome back. I'm Katie Besch, Technical Manager with Adiseo, and I'm joined this week by Dr. Jimena Laporta and Dr. Danielle Sherlock. In our last episode, we covered the generational impacts of in utero heat stress, how that impacts not just the dam, but her future offspring. And this week, we'll be covering the impact that we can have with supplemental methionine. Hey, Jimena, how's it going?
Thank you. Thank you for having me again.
Hey, Danielle, how's it going?
Thank you. Happy to be here again today.
So, okay, it's pretty clear, pretty established. Even a small heat stress insult can be very detrimental for generations. Some things we can do on the management side, like mechanical cooling, we can kind of revert or rescue some of those negative effects. But I think we're more interested recently on the nutrition side. Is there anything we can do in the diet to maybe better support these animals during heat stress, or any way to recover some of this lost performance if they do experience these heat stress events, which are becoming more and more common? So Danielle, I know you have some more work in this area, specifically around how methionine could support cows during heat stress. And I know anyone who's listened to your previous podcast episode, you're one of the experts, a black belt, and your black belt episodes, number 24 and number 27, looked at methionine's role in heat stress and in immunity. So can you maybe catch us up? Why are we interested in methionine specifically? What is that potential for some of that heat stress support?
One of my favorite topics, methionine not only is an amino acid for protein synthesis, but it has a lot of functional roles through its metabolism in the one carbon metabolic pathways. In those pathways, it's metabolized to S-adenosylmethionine, or SAM, our universal methyl donor, which is needed for things like DNA methylation for epigenetic changes, as well as synthesis of metabolites like phosphatidylcholine and carnitine to support fatty acid metabolism. Methionine also serves as a precursor in those one carbon pathways for antioxidants like glutathione to help fight oxidative stress. And it's a regulator and activator of mechanistic target of rapamycin, or mTOR, which for listeners who aren't familiar, mTOR is a major regulator of many cellular pathways, but of particular interest for us in dairy nutrition is that mTOR regulates both protein and fat synthesis. And so by turning it on with methionine, we can support greater milk protein and fat synthesis as well. And when we look at periods of stress, we first started looking at the transition period and saw that through those pathways and those functions, methionine was really setting transition cows up with better liver function, immune function, less oxidative stress and inflammation, all of which prepare her to produce more milk and have better health and repro during that transition period. And then we started thinking about heat stress and the trial that Katie mentioned at the University of Illinois, where methionine supplementation with that electric heat blanket model did something similar. It was really setting those cows up with greater antioxidant synthesis, better mTOR activation, and stemming from that, then those cows ended up having less of a decrease in both milk fat and protein. So we were better maintaining performance during heat stress. And so then we kind of expanded from there. We started thinking about the millions of cows that are experiencing both transition period and heat stress. at the same time and started thinking, could methionine be beneficial there, not only for the cow, but also the calf, and maybe to break the cycle of some of those heat stress effects that we've been talking about today. And that led us to do a large study with Jimena at UW to kind of answer those questions.
Very good. So yeah, Danielle, you had the research on the methionine support during heat stress throughout different phases of lactation. Jimena, you have this model for the generational impacts of heat stress. And now we're pairing the two to kind of see what you guys saw together.
Adiseo, a global leader in nutritional solutions and the provider of SmartAmine M, the best-in-class rumen-protected methionine product for dairy producers who want to optimize milk production, capture more value from their components, and maintain the lifetime performance of their herds. For more product information and to calculate your return on investment when you balance your feed with amino acids, go to milkpay.com.
So, Jimena, do you want to outline maybe the first part of that study? What did you see with that heat stress and the methionine supplementation? Maybe we'll start off on the cow side and then move to the calf side, the results there.
Yes, of course. So a couple of comments on Danielle's answer. I think it's important to, in the webinar that you were mentioning, we talked about the connection between cooling and nutritional approaches, right? So I think nutrition is very important. And of course, I'm not a nutritionist, so I got into this world kind of like by chance. But of course, I recognize the importance of that, right? So one of the main things that heat stress does is reduce dry matter intake. So those deficiencies come right away. As a physiologist, we know the impact that that can have. But work from Lance Baumgart have shown that it's not just about intake. There's some impacts of heat stress that directly affect the mammary gland and different other tissues that are leading to those reductions in milk that we see in the lactating cow. So there are many things we can do nutritionally. We can start very simple with changes in diets and things like that. There's supplements, additives. I like to think about methionine more than just an additive, and want to kind of like walk you through my interest in methionine. We didn't talk about epigenetics so much, but and I don't want to get into the nitty-gritty of that, but that's where my interest is lying in terms of methionine, because it's a methyl donor. And I know from my research that heat stress leads to changes in the epigenome. And so my thought was, all right, so if we're having these epigenetic changes that are sustained over time, and that might be one of the reasons why we see these long-term effects, what is methionine going to be doing? And so when we started this research, we went above and beyond, and we end up doing a lot of other things. And it's the fascinating part of working with heat stress. It doesn't impact one tissue. It doesn't impact one cell type. It impacts the animal as a whole. And so that's methionine. So I think that combining the two is really where the link lays, right? So setting up a little bit about the experiment, we had 60 transition cows that a group of those, a third of those were fed methionine at 2.6. And here's where Danielle can help me with the reminders, 2.6% of metabolizable protein. And the other two groups were fed at 2.2. We heat stress a couple of those groups. So we had a thermoneutral group, a thermoneutral heat stress group with an electric heat blanket, and then a third group where we had an electric heat blanket and methionine. So we were interested in specific contrasts there. I'm not going to get into the details of that, but we had three groups. And so what we did is we followed them through the transition period, 4 weeks before, 4 weeks after. Of course, they were pregnant, so we also followed their heifers. And so from the cow side of things, what we've seen is that we didn't see a whole lot of differences in milk volume, but we do see that heat stress impacts milk protein percentage, fat yield and percentage as well, though numerically in that department. It also impacts, in general, solids non-fat. It impacts liver function as well. It really takes a toll on that liver. And it impacts also the placenta of those cows. We also look at liver and mammary function of those cows, and we see also impacts of heat stress. And so what methionine is doing in these cows is really helping, as Danielle mentioned, help them transition during that stressful time that is the transition period. And on top of that, we add heat stress. So it's a compounding factor. And so methionine, what seems to be doing, at least in the mammary gland, what we observed, is really setting it up as starting better, that lactation. It improves, it increases the number of alveoli that that gland is going to have. It increases the number of mammary epithelial cells. Although we don't see different improvements in milk, we weren't expecting those, because heat stress is impacting yield, but also protein percentage. And so what we see is that in the mammary gland, methionine is allowing those cells to make more protein. And that we expect. We have seen effects of methionine under thermoneutral conditions, improving milk protein. That's kind of the consistent effect of methionine. But it's really nice to see that they can do so under heat stress. So the mammary gland is sort of prioritizing throughout maybe improvements in mTOR, in other one carbon metabolism genes and proteins, improving cell proliferation in that gland. That's why we see more cells capable of making milk and protein and components. And so the mammary gland is transitioning better, even under heat stress. And so we see this rescue of milk protein percentage in those animals. In the liver, I mentioned briefly, improves in liver function, and that's great. We know the liver is important in transition cows, liver metabolism, and so methionine is, you know, upregulating the expression of all those genes that Danielle mentioned. We see that consistent effect. So cows are better prepared to transition under heat stress. So in a nutshell, that's what we see in this project. And it's important to note that these were electric heat blanket cows. So the response that you get in terms of heat stress, it's a little milder than environmentally induced heat stress, the studies that we've seen in Florida. But it's interesting to see these consistent effects of heat stress and how a nutritional intervention can somewhat rescue those effects.
Great points.
Yeah, and if I can jump in too, just a little related to the production response, the changes in protein and fat yield were only numerical, but still pretty substantial, like a 70 gram increase in fat yield and 90 grams in protein yield. So not statistically significant, but pretty substantial. And there is an economic benefit to that. I ran some simulation yesterday with current milk pricing, and even with today's numbers, we're losing less money in terms of fat and protein when we supply methionine to those cows, losing close to a dollar in terms of fat and protein yield in those control cows under heat stress. But those methionine cows under heat stress, we're losing only about 9 cents per day in terms of fat and protein yield. So helping to mitigate that economic loss.
Yeah, that's really a huge savings. So we know heat stress is going to be detrimental. We know producers could lose those components that they're paid on. This could be one opportunity to recover, some of those losses or really mitigate that risk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so in terms of, thank you for running the numbers, because, you know, I'm not good in that department, so I do the science here. but I think in general, you know, methionine, it's helping that animal transition better in terms of the liver, mammary gland adaptations, and other things we have seen is that it helps to uptake amino acids in the mammary gland. And that explains a little bit that protein effect and things like that. So it's critical during the transition period. We know a lot of cows are deficient, diets are deficient in methionine. So it's very important to link the two, right? So Yeah, exactly.
But like you said, it's not just the substrate for milk protein. It's also those tissue changes that you saw in the alveoli or in the mammary gland.
Yes.
That's also part of it. That's really interesting.
And another department that Danielle is, it's more of an expert than I am, we see improvements in glutathione, and that's expected because of the transferation pathway. But we see improvements in antioxidant capacity, not only in the liver, but also in the mammary gland and in the placenta. So that calf is getting some beneficial effects in utero as well. And so kind of like I didn't answer your whole question because I didn't talk about the effects on the daughters, but we can do that in when you tell me to.
That's perfect. Yes, let's talk about the daughters next. We saw, yes, the negative impacts of heat stress on the cows, how methionine helps rescue some of that. What about the daughters from those cows?
Yes, so one of the objectives of this study was to follow those heifers born to cows that were either thermoneutral, heat stress, or heat stress with supplemental methionine. And one thing that we did in this project was to collect the placentas of these cows. And we're now working on putting together these manuscripts, so stay tuned. But what we see is that heat stress, no surprise, impacts placental growth. They have smaller placentas, with impacts in the cotyledons as well, in the size and the surface area, the number of cotyledons. So it structurally affects the mammary gland. It also affects the antioxidant capacity and things like that. So that developing heifer is exposed to that dysfunctional placenta in a way. So when they are born, those heat stress cows are going to be born smaller. They also have, as a hallmark of utero heat stress we have seen in most of our projects, a less capacity to absorb immunoglobulins from colostrum. They have dysregulated thermoregulation. They have all sorts of things. They grow slower during the first 3 weeks and then up until weaning. Then they recuperate that growth, but we see those early life effects in these heifers born to heat stress blanket cows. Now, methionine, of course, it doesn't solve all the problems, of course, but it does help those heifers to recover some of those effects. They are impacts in growth are recuperated. We also see that milk production of those heat stress daughters that I was telling you earlier, those heifers, when they start lactation, they're going to produce 2,000 pounds less milk in their first lactation. And what we see is that methionine partially rescuing that effect, and those heifers are going to be producing 300 pounds more than the heat stress. Numerical difference, and we have to take this with a little bit of a grain of salt because of the lower numbers that we have at this point. But it's important to see that. I'm sure that in the field, these differences are going to be different. And so it's important to see that methionine is helping that calf during early life to grow better and to produce slightly more milk in their first lactation. And that placental effects that we see are huge. I think that we often forget how important that placenta is in the development of these heifers and setting them off for a good start. And so I think the methionine rescue the placenta function, it's a really important one that we need to take a closer look into.
Yeah, this was fascinating because I think we had seen before that from a heat stress dam, we would get a smaller calf. But now you're really understanding, oh, okay, the heat stress is leading to a lighter placenta, fewer cotyledons, decreasing those amino acid transporters, and methionine specifically can help recover some of those things. So that's really fascinating to see.
Yeah. So like the amino acid transporters are really interesting because that's the substrate for calf growth, right? That's what they're needing to grow. And so it does make sense, but seeing it is really impactful on how a single amino acid can really change the dynamics. It's really cool. We measure amino acids in the calf, in the mom, in the placenta. There's a lot of data that we're putting together and trying to understand still. And Danielle got the manuscript a few weeks ago, and still kind of wrapping our heads around and trying to understand what all this means. But I think holistically, we can say that providing methionine during heat stress is really helping that cow, that calf, to better transition to lactation and to life outside the womb, I would say, and help them be a better cow.
Yeah. Danielle, get those edits done. Let's go.
I know. I got to go fast.
She did. She's done.
Okay. Good. So let's make sure we caught this one last part on. So the first lactation heifers, but from those heat stress dams, whether the dam received methionine or was just heat stressed and didn't receive methionine, then we follow these calves. And now in their first lactation, you see this huge difference in production where, heat stress in utero decreased their first lactation production, but methionine could recover a little bit of that. And I know this was not a huge difference, but I don't want anyone to discount this because this is kind of a freebie, right? Like we could consider that cost of methionine supplementation to be put on the dam. So that already happened. Now these first lactation animals are entering their productive life, and we're still seeing this lasting effect, whether the dam had methionine or not during a heat stress event, a short heat stress event.
Yeah, no, that's a good way to put it. I like that freebie concept because that's the value of dry cow management, right? So you're, whatever you're doing to improve that, it's going to have a two-way benefit on the cow's next lactation, potentially through improvements in mammary development, and in that fetus that not only is going to have a better life early on, it's kind of expected to see that those improvements in early life, but later in life, those will show up. Especially when thinking about heat stress and all of the tissues and organ systems that we talked about. I mean, we didn't talk about survival, but a lot of these animals leave the herd. And so you're losing a lot of potential there as well. And if you want to think in dollars, that's a lot of dollars down the drain. And so if those heifers that can make it to their first lactation, you can have a benefit of 300 pounds more than if they were not provided in utero methionine in a way. So
great point. Let's see, Danielle, any other questions here on the heat stress and with or without methionine supplementation?
No, I don't think so. It's very exciting data. And I think this is the first time we've been able to show this long-term impact with methionine of this kind of feeding for dual purpose, feeding that cow to also benefit the calf. The only other thing would be, we're filming this ADSA is next week. Hemant, I don't know if you want to comment at all on the new research that we're going to be sharing next week at the conference.
Yes. So from this project, we only have a couple, like one abstract left to showcase, and we're working on that manuscript as we speak. This is a collaborative project with INRA in France, looking with Dr. Marion Boutinard, and we are working on mammary gland, looking at milk mineral composition, looking at mammary gland microstructure as well, looking at tight junctions, the permeability of that mammary gland under heat stress, and how methionine is helping to recuperate some of those effects. And so that's going to be showcased during ADSA. And another project that is not linked directly to this one, but it has to do with methionine, is we're starting to work with calf nutrition and looking at how we can lower crude protein in the diet, in the grain, starter grain. And so we did this large project with 150 heifers, six treatments where we are lowering crude protein. This concept is talked about in cows a lot, but not too much in calves. So starting to get those conversations out on, can we decrease crude protein in the grain and still get those growth benefit, the growth benchmarks, hit those benchmarks. So what we did is we lowered crude protein from 20 to 16, to 2018, 16, with or without methionine, because we thought maybe if we lower it to 16, you know, this that we're going to start seeing some impairments, and then methionine is an essential amino acid, can be helping with not the that detriment in growth. So I'm not going to steal my students' thunder, but we see some interesting results there, and we're now starting to explore more of the molecular aspect. But you know, one thing that it's important is that lowering crude protein is not impacting calf growth as much as we thought it would, and methionine is doing its things there. So we're starting to explore some of the molecular aspects, looking at mammary gland, muscle, and liver methionine implications. And so that's going to be probably next ADSA, but we're working on this area, which is really fascinating and something that I'm learning a lot about too, and is exciting. So thank you for asking. Yeah.
Yeah. Very interesting. We'll have to have the student on a podcast episode. They can give the update.
Oh, for sure. She'll love that.
Very good. Thanks for the preview. Yeah. And let's see. And maybe that's a good reminder. So one last question for Danielle. What do you think? Should we only be feeding methionine during heat stress? Or where do we see those other benefits? Or can you maybe share some targets for nutritionists when they're balancing their rations? What should those methionine levels be at? What do we think about?
Yeah, that's a great question. Methionine is going to be beneficial, you know, all year round, but especially during periods of stress, like heat stress, that's when we're going to especially have a need for it to support those immunometabolic functions, those antioxidants, mTOR, everything we've talked about today. And when thinking a little bit about requirements, especially during heat stress, we're looking at targeting a lysine to methionine ratio of about 2.6 to 2.7 to 1. From all of our work, that's really going to set those cows up metabolically to prepare them for that heat stress and help them maintain performance. Thinking about how to do that, starting with the close-up cow, you're probably going to look at adding about 5 to 6 grams of additional metabolizable methionine to the diet. And then in those fresh cows, it's going to be about 10 to 12, usually, grams of additional metabolizable methionine to reach that. And then those lactating cows, we usually recommend targeting the CNCPS guidelines, looking at about 1.1, 1.19 grams of methionine per mcal of ME. And that's really going to help you hit that ratio and really set them up for performance benefits and help you, again, to mitigate those economic losses. For example, what I talked about earlier in terms of mitigating that loss in terms of milk fat and protein yield economics.
All right. Jimena, anything we missed or you wanted to cover from the research? Anything else that you would like to share?
No, I think just as, you know, summer is approaching and I think it's already here, even in the Midwest, start thinking about your lactating cows, but also don't forget about your dry cows because of all the generational effects, whether it's nutrition approaches, cooling approaches. It's not about one or the other. It's more of a holistic approach to heat stress, I think. And also the calf. We're doing a lot of work now in the newborns and also the pre-weaning phase and how heat stress can really impact those animals as well. They're still growing and developing and sensing their environment and, you know, developing some cooling strategies for them as well. I think that's up and coming and, you know, excited to work in that area as well.
We'll look forward to seeing the new data as it comes out.
Thank you.
It's time for our famous three.
Very good. All right. So I think we covered everything, how we, for our heat abatement strategies, we don't want to move away from our cooling approaches, but maybe we can now also supplement some targeted nutrition, things like methionine to help cool the cow from the inside. And Jimena shared some amazing research showing how methionine really helps us break that heat stress cycle and recover some of that lost performance, both for the cow and for her future generations. So to wrap up the dairy podcast, as you guys know, we like to do these final three questions. And I know, Jimena, you've been on the pod before, so I thought we'd take a different approach. Danielle and I we'll share the burden a little bit.
Thank you.
But you can still take a swing at the first one here. What is your favorite dairy-related book or resource?
Well, thank you for the question. I'm a little bit biased here. I guess in terms of general reading, with two kids and like a busy life, I wish I would have more time to read, you know, general literature, but I don't. So I would say that, the time I spend outside of academic reading, I spend with my family and my kids. So when I read academic research, I think Journal of Dairy Science is a really good one. And I say a shameless plug because I'm an editorial board member of Journal of Dairy Science Communication. So, and I also review for the Journal of Dairy Science. So I think it's really impressive, the research that we're seeing coming up in the Journal of Dairy Science and JDSC Communications. I'm excited to learn about all of the things that researchers are doing and the practical aspects. Of course, the research can get overwhelming at times, but I think that extension specialists and you guys are trying to translate this research also in a more practical for producers, for farmers. What does this really mean, right? So I think Journal of Dairy Science, JDSC are very important, but also trusting to the extension agents to really translate this research into the practical application. So you guys are also doing a great job with that. So yeah, I would say, those two are my go-to.
That's a good reminder. There's so much new science out there, but what do we do with it? How do we help translate it to everyone in the field? Great reminder.
Yeah.
All right, Danielle, let's see. You're up.
Perfect.
Our question for you today, what is your favorite resource outside of dairy?
I like to read a lot in general. Outside, I do a lot of reading on the research side, Journal of Dairy Science, of course. But outside, I like to read a variety of books. I guess, let's see, one of my favorites probably is anything by the author Kristen Hanna. She's got some really good books out there, like The Nightingale or The Women, that I enjoy reading those and recommend checking out if you get a chance.
And I heard there are a couple movie adaptations of at least one of those coming, so we'll have to check that out too. Okay, we'll review that on the next pod.
We'll become a movie podcast.
Okay, sure.
We can do a book club.
Oh, we should do that.
Maybe I start reading after that.
Okay, and our final question I will take is, what sets apart those dairy professionals who are most successful? And I think what we see the dairy producers, the nutritionists that we work with, I really notice it's someone who's willing to try something new. They hear about something at a conference, they read about something in a popular press article or in a JDSC article, and they want to try it and really see for themselves if implementing some strategy, altering their methionine supplementation, anything really, has an effect. So I really think that helps set those professionals apart. All right. And if my co-hosts and guests don't have any other comments, then that concludes today's episode of the Dairy Podcast presented by Wyzenetics and Adiseo. Don't forget to subscribe to the Dairy Podcast to stay up to date on future episodes. And for more information on methionine support during heat stress, feel free to check out our websites, adiseo.com or milkpay.com. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.